Welcome to the Smoke and Rope Podcast, the show that brings together Michigan's top cannabis growers, advocates, and business owners to offer a fresh and honest perspective of Michigan's cannabis industry. Stick with us to get the lowdown from the people who have been on the ground floor of cannabis business in Michigan and gain insights into where the industry may be heading. Hello, welcome to episode 10 of the Smoke and Rope Podcast. I'm Ryan Basor, and today I'm excited to announce that we have Jamie Cooper, the Managing Director of Sensi Connects, and also the Market Director of Sensi Magazine Michigan on the show today to talk about marketing, persistence, brands, relationships, and kind of her take on Michigan marijuana. Thanks for being on the show, Jamie.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Looking forward to the conversation. I want to say hello to my co-host. Sam Rosinski is not able to make it today, but we are blessed to have Kevin Pybus back from last week with True Cannabis. Kevin, what's going on in Lansing?
Oh, not much, man. Just trying to hold it down. Hope everybody's having a good afternoon.
All right. And Tom Beller over at Real Leaf Solutions up in Kalkaska. I call that the Lansing of the North. How's it going in Kalkaska, Tom?
It's fantastic, Ryan. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great. So I wanted to, you know, as we always do on the show, give a little background on our guest and then let Jamie kind of talk about herself and get into a lot of topics. I mean, we'll only be on for a half hour, but we could talk for days with Jamie. So and Jamie doesn't know this, and I first kind of became aware of Jamie. I know she moved to Michigan when I was in prison, and I got out in 2015 and was working with MI Legalize. And one thing I always talk about is, or tell my friends, is reality. My reality TV is the Michigan marijuana, basically, community on social media. I get a kick out of it. I follow it. I follow everything. And Jamie kind of came on the scene, was networking hard, very active. And what I first noticed, really saw her was in 2015, there was a rally at the Capitol, and I'm sure Jamie remembers it. She was with Women Grow, and there was a little bit of an incident where somebody put it on, got mad at Jamie and really kind of attacked her and went after her, and I watched how Jamie handled it. And then, you know, I watched from, you know, she started another business with a partner. Possibly maybe it didn't work out. Maybe it wasn't, maybe it was the partner, but a bit of a bad breakup, picked herself up again, among other things, ran for city council in Grand Haven, did a grassroots great job, not from there, and got third of the votes. And, at that time, they appointed, I think, she can tell us about it, but she didn't win, but then there was an opening, and really it should have been her. She was next in line of votes, and they picked a good old boy. So, you know, then Jamie gets going with her networking and her, traveling around the state, which is now Sensi Connects, and then COVID hits. So, you know, all this happening, Jamie just keeps getting up and up. And then finally, I was excited to see that, it's really paying off. She was, she won with the Grand Haven Provisioning Center spot. So that's kind of my take on what me watching Jamie from the outside. I don't know Jamie as well as some of the other guests, but I've always been watching and just highly impressed with your persistence and your toughness. So with that, Jamie, I'll be quiet and kind of give us your background, why you came to Michigan when you did and what's happened.
Thank you so much. Holy crap, you remember a lot. That's pretty much the whole journey. I came to Michigan, so I met my husband, who grew up in West Michigan. I met him in Colorado. We were both working in the ski industry, and I had kind of tapped out in my career in marketing out there. Learned really quickly that ski bums just don't get paid money. And with a special needs child, it was time to kind of move on and figure out our next steps. And our next steps brought us to Michigan. And so I was making a career change because there's a ski industry in Michigan, but not like it is in Colorado. And so I got here, and I became a pretty avid cannabis consumer in Colorado, with it being an adult use state. I was there in 2014 when they rolled out the first year of their adult use program, and it really opened my eyes. And then I came to Michigan and then realized I could get arrested for using cannabis without a medical marijuana card. And quite honestly, it kind of pissed me off. It was like, what? I can't believe this is still happening. And so then I went down a rabbit hole. As I was searching how to get my card, I kind of saw what was happening with, you know, in Michigan to try to get commercialization of cannabis in the works. My legalized, I immediately became a part of the first effort to get it on the ballot. You know, in 2015, I started a marketing company. I pretty much offered my services for free for Michigan Normal just to get something on my resume so I could start some sort of career in this industry. And Michigan Normal gave me a scholarship for $500, and this was like 5 years ago, like right now. They gave me $500 to let me go out to LA for a convention and expo. It was the World Congress Cannabis Business Expo. And when I was out there, that's when I took the Women Grow chairwoman position and started leading networking events in Grand Rapids for women that were interested in starting businesses in the industry. Did that for about a year and a half or so. As you said, I got into business with another partner. I ended up losing the company because in business, you have to learn some tough lessons, and I've learned to be very grateful for that. And, you know, those lessons that I have learned, and lost a business, and, you know, it felt like a breakup. It hurt a bit. And then it was always life redirecting me and telling me where I needed to be. And so I got back on my feet and started taking on marketing projects, and specifically projects to open up these municipalities, because I felt like it was a marketing job, because I had seen it all go down in Colorado, and I felt like I could use that perspective to try to open up communities throughout Michigan. So I was getting hired by a lot of licensees to start opening up the municipalities, and I ended up loving that work. And in that type of work, you realize the corruption and the crap that exists in local politics, you know, and local politics affects us all, and very directly. And so that's kind of why I got passionate about local politics and decided to eventually run for city council. But in the meantime, you know, as I was navigating through my journey to become a marketer in the industry, I realized that if I wanted to get marketing jobs, I needed to build relationships. And the way I saw it was I had to build relationships on the startup end. I needed to be a resource for the companies that were wanting to start these businesses and just be there for them and connect them to whatever they needed. And then I realized I was making no money, you know, making all these connections, and everybody was starting to make money off of those connections, and I wasn't making anything. And so I learned how to monetize my ability to make those connections, and created Cannabis Connection, which is a networking and lead referral organization. We launched Cannabis in 2018, and then January 2019 started launching weekly networking events throughout the state of Michigan. So I was traveling every single week somewhere in Michigan to host a networking event and kind of help bring community together. And then when COVID hit, you know, everything kind of went out the window, both, you know, with those events and, you know, I had also taken the publisher job with Cincy Magazine to launch the magazine in Michigan. And that was very event focused too. So in March, it was like, well, crap, what now? You know, here's another curveball. And I immediately, by April, like the first week of April, I started hosting virtual networking events, and it ended up working. And that's what grabbed the attention of Cincy Magazine, who I was already obviously working with, and started discussions with them, and through discussions ended up merging with them and creating Cincy Connects, and now expanding the model that we built with cannabis connection here in Michigan, expanding it into about 8 other states now. So it's been one hell of a journey, and I've learned to be grateful for every bit of those challenges and the opportunities that have come along with it. Because, you know, it's just, if you want to be in this business, you definitely have to be resilient and willing to just get back up, brush yourself off, and you know, try plan B and learn from those mistakes.
That's an awesome story, and it resonates with me because I got into Michigan marijuana 11 years ago, and I just think about all the people, talented people and good people, and all the people that just didn't stick it out. Something happened and they couldn't get back up, and it's fun seeing people on the other end having success and you know, knowing what's going on. And that kind of brings me to my first question for you. Because you started the online Facebook group, which is now Michigan Cannabis Business Professionals, correct? And you merged a little while back?
Well, so I had started, it took a few transitions. It was my cannabis professionals or something like that. And then I transitioned it to Cannabis Connection. So it had the Cannabis Connection brand attached to it. And then now it's a Cincy, Michigan group, but I'm an admin for the Michigan Cannabis Professionals group that Harry created. Okay. And had just been by his side since he created that group. And the group that I originally created, because like you said, you know, we've seen a lot of people come into this industry and just not stick it all the way through, but they're still very supportive of cannabis. And so the group that I originally started in 2016 is now specific around cannabis lifestyle, you know, around the support of cannabis and everything that goes along with it. And then I decided to let Harry, you know, really run on his group, and because he was going to be a better manager at it, because I was launching a lifestyle magazine and decided that I wanted to change directions on the group that I had developed beforehand. So now we have this one group that's focused around the lifestyle in cannabis in Michigan, but then the other group that's focused around business professionals.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I actually have never spoken with Harry, but I listened to his interview with Mike Brennan the other day, and man, that guy knows the market. He's sharp. It was a good interview. But that brings me to my question. So you've had to be an admin on these groups and watch this, and it's a tough, maybe some for some people it's a tough line to stay in the middle of. But what's your take, and how have you kind of worked the caregivers, the ones that maybe aren't interested in moving into the market or have tried once or twice and have failed and are bitter, versus, you know, then there's a lot of people in between, like, Kevin, myself, and Tom all on here were caregivers, and they're both licensed growers. They made it through, through a lot of persistence. But, you know, there's people like all of us, and then there's like some of the new corporate groups coming in, basically, you know, would rather see us, people like us, in jail to the other extreme. How have you managed that, and what do you think about all that?
Well, I've always wanted to put myself in a position where I had an understanding heart for all demographics, you know, no matter where they sit on the issue, even those that hate cannabis. You know, I just really try to listen and to educate. And, you know, but at the same time, I'm very grateful before I went into the ski industry, I worked in television news. And as a television news producer, you know, I learned the skill of you know, approaching things, like, because I would answer the phone, you know, as a television news producer, and there'd be somebody all pissed off about something, you know, and yelling at me, and you just gotta keep your cool, and you gotta like listen to them and hear their perspective. But I've also learned to choose my battles. You know, there's some people that you can't convince, you know, to change their minds otherwise, And I want to be supportive to all, no matter where they are in cannabis, because there's a place for all of us. And, you know, and it's just, I try my hardest to stay on that line and really, I don't want enemies. You know, that's something that I try to always make everything right in what I do. And so it really is it's a fine line that you have to kind of stand on and make sure that you try to be supportive to all and understanding.
Hi, Jamie. This is Kevin Pybus with True Cannabis. I know we haven't had a chance to meet, but I look forward to meeting with you. It sounds like you and I have, you know, very similar stories. I was out in Colorado. I lived out there for 13 years. I grew up here in Michigan, lived out there for 13 years. And while I was out there, I was in the marijuana industry, but I had a hard time navigating the rules and regulations. I didn't know timelines. I had attorneys that were, you know, charging huge amounts of money for information that, you know, now in hindsight was readily available by, you know, attending city council meetings or being in the know, you know. And then you also talked a little bit about the corruption in the politics of what was going on out there. I saw in Aurora, Colorado, how they had the ping pong ball lottery where, you know, the people in the know and the people with the money got the most ping pong balls, and it was, you know, leaned in one way or another. And so, yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting hearing you talk about the same things that I kind of went through. And when I came back to Michigan, I knew that it was going to be incredibly important for me to get involved and have some of the timelines and figure out what was going to be happening preemptively so that I could position myself to get a license and move forward. It seems you did just that. You came back here to Michigan, you got involved there in Grand Haven, running for city council, speaking to people about medical marijuana. And now it seems that you're getting rewarded by getting that license in Grand Haven, which is excellent. Congratulations on that. Some of our listeners, you know, they have aspirations to be in a business owner in the industry. You and I had plenty of time to kind of learn as we went along, because we did have some time, because you're going to wear a ton of different hats if you're a small business owner. What advice would you give to people that are trying to get involved right now, you know, that may not have the time that we had to learn these things? How would you advise them? How would they get going?
Surround yourself with people that are smarter than you, people that already know that. There's so many people in this industry that's willing to be a mentor, you know, and I think that's a really great way to learn a lot, because when I got into this, I didn't know anything either. So that's the approach that I took, was that's why I reached out to Michigan Normal and was like, hey, like, what kind of help do you need? How can I help you? Here's my expertise. Here's how I can help, how I feel like I can help you. And so I suggest that anybody who's interested in being a part of this to consider doing that, to find that mentor that will help, you know, handhold them through that. You know, there's only so much handholding that they will do, because it really does take a lot of effort and resilience on your end as well. And so, you know, everybody starts off not knowing a whole lot, and then they get to a point where they do. And another thing is, it really does take a village. Like, anyone who thinks that they're going to be able to have a license or build a facility with just one person is crazy. You know, it really takes a lot of people to make this happen. I could not have done this without the support of other people. And it somehow magically kind of came together. There were times I was like, this is never going to happen. And, you know, I mean, because the MMFLA was passed in 2016, and here it is 2020. It took me 4 years to finally, like, get the opportunity to land one of these licenses. And I was really like, I wasn't going to take no for an answer either. Like Grand Haven, like people told me over and over and over, and I still hear it, even though we got the lottery, is like, oh, they'll never allow that in Grand Haven. Well, they did. And I put a lot of work to make that happen. You know, I ran for city council. I've sat on the Musical Fountain Committee for 4 years now. I got involved in the community. I started meeting, like running for city council got me introduced to all the city council members, the city manager, you know, all of the administration within the city, and they got to know me. And I feel like that when I ran for city council, I just wanted to be heard. And by doing that, I was heard. And now I realize that I can impact my community in a lot of amazing ways without being an elected seat. And I might not run for city council in 2021, but tell you what, I'm going to make an impact on how that election turns out, because I really care for my community, and I feel like I've built those relationships to you know, help us be understood more, where those that are resistant to us and want to treat us like, you know, we're not normal people, you know, those are the people that we have to make an effort to get out of those elected seats.
Yeah, Jamie, I can't agree more. That's some really great advice. You know, networking in general, and getting out there and meeting everybody. You know, when I was in Colorado, it was weird. You know, I felt like every time I went somewhere to an event that I was by myself and I didn't know anybody. And it seemed like everybody around me knew everybody, and I didn't understand what was going on. And in my mind, I thought that I was kind of being blackballed, and that they were like some kind of group that I didn't know about, you know. And when I got back here, I realized it's exactly what you're talking about. It's rubbing shoulders with one person, then another person comes up and starts talking, and now you're talking to three people, and people start to get to know you. They start to see you at the same meetings. That's how I met Ryan. That's how I met Rick Thompson, Robin Schneider, Kevin McKinney, all these people. You know, they were always at the same meetings I was at. And so I really think that's great advice. You know, another thing that I did when I got back here was joining an industry group, you know, like the MICIA, you know, has over 250 members. Those people are all good people and resources that'll help you get along. So yeah, great advice.
Thanks.
Hey, Jamie, this is Tom with Real Leaf up in Kalkaska. How you doing?
Hi, Tom.
Hey. I don't know if you remember last time we spoke was back pre-COVID, right on the cusp of COVID. We were discussing the potential of the state's first licensed cannabis event. Do you remember that?
I do.
And of course, since then, everything's changed quite a bit, obviously, right? I mean, we had the first license here. We were looking forward to throwing some kind of an event. You know, what do you think, you know, Where can we do it? Which is one question I have for you. COVID aside, we really have very few places to have a licensed event that have opted in for cannabis events to happen in the municipalities. I mean, what do we need to do to encourage more local opt-ins at the municipal level?
Well, one thing that we have to keep in mind is we are, if not the first state, you know, the first state to have licensing for events. And so a lot of these municipalities are just hesitant because there's not a whole lot of data showing how this has worked out for other states. You know, there was that data when it came to licensing for, you know, the other five types of licenses, but not for events. And so I think we're seeing a lot of hesitation on events and the consumption lounges as well. And I think that, you know, we need to be supportive of those that are hosting events in the first communities that do allow. And we need to, you know, work as a team to make sure that those events are successful. And, you know, use that as proof that you know, it's not as scary and unsafe as you think, you know, to these elected officials that are making these decisions. you know, it is going to be a hot minute, I think, before we see events. I mean, back in August, I had to cancel our annual beach party. And it was just, I was a little nervous. I didn't want to take the chance of having a very negative PR experience by hosting an event and, you know, someone coming that was exposed to COVID and exposing others, and it would just be a PR nightmare. And so I think that we're going to see more and more people start trying to host these events. And I think supporting those people and using that as data that we can take to other municipalities and help get them to opt in. Another thing that we need to work on is insurance. Like, the insurance is ridiculous for these types of events. And
I was just about to get to,
yeah. I mean, it's like from my understanding, like, it's like thousands to, or maybe even like tens of thousands of dollars to insure a one-day event. And it's because there's not a whole lot of insurance companies that are willing to insure it. And it's like, obviously Michigan needs insurance reform, period. You know, like, it seems that the insurance companies in the state, you know, have a lot of pull. And so I think we really need to be advocating to see some change on that level.
Absolutely.
Hey, Jamie, this is Ryan again. I wanted to ask you, and maybe you haven't thought too much about it yet, but I'm sure you have, and you can divulge whatever, I guess, you're allowed to. But tell me first about the process and how you ended up winning a Grand Haven Provisioning Center. And then I'd like to hear what you're thinking about how you're going to brand it. Do you know what you're going to call it? You know, the theme, the message. That stuff's fascinating to me because I think you're sitting on a real gold mine if you do it right, and then based on your relationships that you've created and able to get, I'm guessing you're going to be able to get product when a lot of other people aren't going to be able to based on those relationships, based on all that free or almost free work you did helping people. So I guess I'll rephrase that. You know, tell me about the process to get to the provisioning center and then your plan afterwards.
All right. So we started the conversation the very beginning of 2019. This was probably February or March. We had a different city council then. In fact, we had a mayor that was a female and very, very, very against cannabis. And in those conversations, just that was a huge reason why I ran for city council. And so in April, I submitted my bid saying that I was going to run in city council for the election in 2019. And so as I was running for city council, I was also attending all the planning commission meetings, all the city council meetings to put together this ordinance for Grand Haven. I sat down one-on-one with a city council member before I announced my bid to run, got him to talk to another city council member, and they both suggested that it be brought to the table and discussed. And so it got brought to the table, and then it got sent to the planning commission to start drafting zoning for medical in Grand Haven. And so I was a part of that process. And then, this goes all the way through the rest of 2019. I did really great in the primary, made it through the primary, went to the general election. I lost in the general election. Like Ryan said, there was an appointment that had to be made because who became our new mayor, who is definitely supportive of marijuana, unlike the former mayor. I'm pretty sure she lost her seat because of her stance on cannabis. And you know, I made sure that was known, the way that she, you know, some of the idiotic comments that she made, you know, we really put that on display for everybody to hear in the community. And I think that's really helped influence that vote and get her booted. And so I lost the appointment because it did go to one of the old boys club, who is a nice man, you you know? And so he, like, we then, February 2019 is when it finally got approved and pushed through. And we were a part of writing that ordinance. Like, so we pretty much worked with the city. They got to a point where they were just sending me drafts of the ordinance and saying, hey, what do you think of this? What do you think that we should take out? You know, what is redundant to what's in the state application? So, I mean, when I was in this position where they trusted me and they trusted my expertise to have me look at this ordinance and make suggestions. And so we draft, and I had suggested that they draft it to allow for the opportunities to go to locals first. So that's what they did. They made it to where it was it's kind of a merit-based lottery. And so the first people that get looked at first were those that had at least 33% ownership in the license. And then those that didn't have that ownership were looked at second. So when the city started taking applications in July and they did the lottery, 7 applications were submitted and 6 of them had that ownership requirement, and they were only taking 4, they're only giving out 4 licenses. So we ended up getting the lucky pull, getting pulled second, but you know, had it not been for all that relationship building and me being willing to put myself out there and run for city council, I don't know if I would be in this spot. It really did take a lot of work, and I had to really put myself out there. You know, people, I was known as that candidate that was running because marijuana, but I really didn't care. Like, somehow I was able to kind of put that aside and not let it bother me, because it got me really what I needed. I like I said, I just wanted to be heard by the community, and I think I was.
Yeah, did Arlen Meekov's group end up getting one?
So, no, he did not, and he was in of those meetings too.
Yeah, I saw the pictures.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Like, unless he was the 7th. So there were 6 that had that local ownership, and there was a 7th that did not, and it may have been his group. But I don't know. And I was actually approached by his group. And I kind of cold shouldered it. You know, I was like, I didn't want to have any association with that man. I mean, he's known to be a slime ball. I mean, he's treated our industry. He wouldn't even, like, in 2016, when I was trying to meet with him one-on-one, he wouldn't even meet with me. You know, and now, like, he wants to, you know, he wanted to try to work with me. It was disgusting.
Good decision.
You didn't throw him a fundraiser. That was the problem.
Right. Apparently that worked.
You get his ear if you throw him a fundraiser and raise him $50,000, and then he'll make stupid jokes about cannabis in front of you. You know, that's what happened to us.
Right.
Anyway, Jamie, this is Kevin again from True Cannabis. I did want to ask you about Grand Haven. Are they doing cultivation and processing up there? And do you guys have any plans for either one of those?
They are. So we partnered with a group that is going to have a cultivation facility and processing. It's not going to be in Grand Haven. Grand Haven is allowing that. Although there were no applications submitted for it, but, you know, real estate in Grand Haven is quite pricey. And so, you know, unless you're sitting on a property already, you know, it just didn't seem like a whole lot of companies wanted to come in and put that amount of money on real estate.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Sometimes the barriers to entry, just the law doesn't mean anything if you can't get anything, right?
Right.
Well, just in case anyone out there was wondering, not in the know, this is new to Michigan industry. Arlen Meekov was the old speaker of, what was he, the head of the Senate or the House? I think he might have been.
Senate Majority Leader.
He was the head of the Senate Majority Leader, yeah, because him and, anyways. He's just kind of been a thorn in our side in cannabis in Michigan for years. Along with some of his counterparts, and he got out of cannabis, and then now he's trying to be a part. I mean, he got out of office, and now he's trying to be a part of cannabis. So that's a little background on that. But man, that went fast. I can't believe that's the time's wrapping up. Like I said, we keep talking, but one thing, want to let everyone get a chance to give any parting thoughts, as we always do. And Tom, what do you got?
Well, you know, we have the end of caregiver contributions into the market coming up here pretty quick. Things are rapidly changing in the market in Michigan, and you seem to be well connected. And you talk to people on a daily basis. I was just curious to see what your thoughts were as far as the industry evolves in Michigan. Where do you think we're headed here as the next step?
It's going to be interesting to see. It really is, because I think that we have a law that is pretty flexible, and I'm grateful that we do have the Marijuana Regulatory Agency that does seem to listen to the operators. I think that is huge, because there's a lot of other states that have a regulatory agency that doesn't listen to the operators. They think they can make decisions without actually listening to the experts. And so I think that I want to see the MRA continue to have an open ear, you know, especially when it comes to the event licenses and the consumption lounges and micro licenses, where, you know, there's a lot of difficulty behind that right now. And we want to see that continue to progress. But, you know, I think that you know, it's going to be a different picture 2 to 5 years from now. You know, there's going to be a lot of operations that they're going to be operational, and a lot of products on the shelves, and, you know, a huge decrease in pricing. And so what's it going to look like? I don't know, but I think it's going to look a lot better than it did 5-6 years ago when I moved to Michigan, because it was definitely a scary place to move from Colorado, you know. And I am just thrilled to see how much it has progressed in the last 6 years. It's, you know, it's everything that I had always hoped for this state, and I can't wait to see our state shine because of cannabis.
Yeah, actually, just next week on Monday, I am part of the stakeholder group with the MRA, so I'm going to have firsthand experience here to see how exactly they interact with the business community as far as getting feedback, because as Ryan knows, I have quite the list of questions when it comes to things with all the irons we have going on, so I'll definitely be reporting back next week as far as how that goes. But thank you, Jamie.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
And Kevin, before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts or a final question?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Jamie for coming on the show today. Your story is incredible and inspirational, and I'm thankful to have people like you on an everyday basis out there advocating for a fair market and a good industry here in Michigan, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And then, Jamie, any final thoughts or message to our listeners you want to share?
Yeah, you know, just I encourage everyone to really stand up and be a voice for this. There's our battles in this industry are far from over. You know, we still need banking solutions. We need federal reform. You know, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. And we need to open up a lot more of these municipalities. They need to, especially in a time like COVID, where all the budgets are running dry, there's a huge opportunity for these communities. And it's our jobs to really educate them and bring the data to the table that's going to help them change their minds. And so I just encourage everyone to become an advocate. If you really truly believe in cannabis, you know, do a little bit more than just consume it. You know, we really need more voices to be a part of this, not only in Michigan, but nationally.
And that is great. I feel like this show is a little bit of a theme we did before about, you know, what it takes and to make it in cannabis and how did we get our starts. So the message here just completely resonates is relationships, 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 and then hard work. I've told people, and a lot of people don't want to hear it. Sometimes you have to volunteer. Sometimes you have to be willing to work for free to prove people your worth. And I think everybody on this show has done that. I know when I got out of prison, I did a lot of that. Put my head down. It's not 40 hours. It used to be 60 or 80. And You know, there's plenty of opportunities. Like Jamie just said, you want to make a difference. You're starting in the industry and you want to stand out. Put in extra time. Start getting in there and advocating for banking reform, getting people out of prison. You know, there's a lot of fights left. That's how we all cut our teeth, and that's how we did it, and that's how we built relationships. And if you're passionate, that's how it's going to work. So great episode. Once again, thanks, Tom. Thanks, Kevin. And, of course, thanks, Jamie, for being on. And with that, I'll talk to everyone next week.
Take it easy.
Thank you.
The Smoke and Rope podcast is produced and hosted by me, Ryan Basor, the owner of Redemption Cannabis. Have ideas for episode topics or would like to be a guest on the show? Contact us at ryanb@redemptioncanna.com. Thanks for being along for the journey.